Hey everyone, welcome to the Dead Name Mac podcast, a show that dives into the lives and minds of regular parents just like you and me to share why parenthood is both the most challenging and the most rewarding experience you can have in life. We'll discuss the complexities of the issues and challenges we all face along our journeys as humans and gain a deeper understanding of the personal transformations we go through along the way. Maybe you're someone who's on the fence about having kids, or maybe you know you want them and are struggling to determine if you're ready, or maybe you already have them and you are feeling like you've hit a wall of uncertainty in your life. This podcast is for you. I'm your host, Mac, and I'm a millennial dad in my 30s who is constantly seeking new ways to improve and optimize the parent experience to find the right balance between parental responsibilities and self-fulfillment. I hope you'll join me on this journey to better understand the importance of parenthood and how we can make a difference and a positive impact on the world as parents. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Dead Name Mac podcast. Previously, we discussed the game of Jenga and how it is the perfect metaphor for life in a variety of ways. I laid out the foundation of my structure and provided you with an overview of the four key areas of life as I see them today: finances, relationships, self-fulfillment, and self-actualization. I then went on to explain how the game of Jenga can be used to visually show both how these areas are constructed using individual blocks representing time and objects, events, or people in our lives, as well as how they intertwine over time, creating new versions of ourselves that are stronger, more knowledgeable, and more capable of taking on adversity and reaching new heights. In today's episode, I'm going to dive into the first of the four key areas of life, finances. I'll touch on what we can do with money versus what we can't, explain why I believe having a stable financial foundation is critical to our success as a world, share how I've changed my approach to personal finances over the years, and provide a summary of the financial cornerstones that have created a stable base for my family and allowed me to start directly approaching the other areas of life with a deeper level of focus. Let's get into it. Money, 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 money. It's all around us. It's been woven into the fabric of modern society, and it's nearly essential to survival in today's world. Most of us have been raised with a focus on money as a means to support ourselves financially. We need to go to school and get a good grade so we can get a good job and make money to pay for our homes, our food, our clothes, our cars, our kids' expenses, our pets' expenses, our retirement. Beyond our immediate expenses, money is used to support our lifestyles. We save money for nice dinners or nights out on the town. We save it for sports events, for concerts, for movies, for trips to Disney World or the zoo. And we save money for some of the most important events or experiences in our lives, for college tuition, for our weddings, for our kids' birthdays, for travel and vacations. A heavy majority of the things we do in life to make our lives entertaining and more enjoyable require money, a transactional currency to do or experience. And we have a desire to earn, save, and spend money on these things because they add that level of variety and interest to our daily lives that makes us feel good, that makes us feel more alive, that makes us feel excited and happy. We're therefore conditioned by society to understand that money, in essence, is a transactional tool that can be used to buy happiness. But wait, money can't buy happiness, right? In and of itself, money alone cannot buy us happiness in the sense that no matter how much we may earn or save over time, we can still find ourselves feeling like we are missing something. When it comes to having money, we all seem to want more. Whether you're homeless seeking a few dollars from strangers, a middle-class American seeking a job promotion for higher pay, or a Fortune 500 CEO seeking to reach the top of the wealth charts, we all have this innate desire to want more money. Money in today's world represents status and power. If I have more than you, I have an advantage. I have greater purchasing power. I have greater influence. I have greater freedom. And that freedom allows me more opportunities, more choices in life. There's that concept of choice again. As I explained in my Jenga Part 1 episode, the game of Jenga, just like life, is all about choices. We want options to choose from as we feel a level of anxiety and stress when our options are limited. On the other hand, we sometimes feel a similar level of anxiety we are presented with too many options because it can overwhelm us. While I may have more money and more options to do what I want to do in life, that doesn't alone ensure I'll be more happy than you. You hear stories all the time about celebrities who have all the fame and fortune imaginable, experiencing severe depression, unhappiness, loneliness, and sometimes, unfortunately, it can lead to early deaths. How is it then that someone with millions of dollars, the type of money most of us seek at some point in our lives, can be unhappy? Well, I think there are two main reasons. First, we have to really understand why we want money. We all would love to have more opportunities, the ability to buy whatever car we want, whatever brand clothes we want to wear, to be able to fly first class or private, to be able to go where we want, when we want. But why do we want that maximized level of optionality? Is it because we really need it? Is it because we really feel like having those opportunities will make us feel better, make us truly feel happier? No, the majority of us want those things because of the adoration we expect to receive from others. Let's just say you're the guy with the biggest house, the nicest cars, the giant pool in the backyard, and all the nice toys. Would you really feel a greater level of happiness if you had all of those things, but could never show them to anyone else? You have to live in your giant mansion alone with all your things, but can't show them off to any friends or family or coworkers in person. You can't post any pictures to social media. You can't send photos or videos of any of it to anyone. No one knows you have those things except you. Are you going to feel like you're on top of the world? Are you going to feel extremely happy? No. The answer is no. Why? Because what you have is only worth something to you if you can show it off to others, if you can make others envy you, if you can receive praise from others for how nice your things are. If you can't throw giant parties for others, what's the point of having a mansion? If you can't post photos of your chateau in the middle of the Swiss Alps to Instagram, what's the point of spending $50,000 to stay there for a week versus staying at a 5-star hotel? Most people desire money, desire to be rich because of what they believe that wealth will bring them in the form of happiness, born from external sources of praise and affirmation. But what happens if that isn't sustained long term? What happens when you get tired of having to make the effort to show off for that short-term gratification? Or what happens when your friends or family decide they've had enough and get tired of being on the receiving end of your flaunting? What happens when they no longer give you the reactions of praise and admiration they did when you became wealthy? You can become upset, angry, sad. You can become depressed. And this happens because the why behind your desire, your want of money was wrong. It was driven by external factors, by those around you who you may think care much more about your success than they really do. It was a want of attention, of love, of a dopamine boost from your inner narcissist. It wasn't a want rooted in your true values. That is problem number one. Secondly, the other reason money loses its value to us as far as being able to make us happy is because of what it can't buy. Time. Time is your most valuable asset. You may have heard that once or twice, maybe from me, maybe from others, but it's one of the cliches we often dismiss much too quickly. Most of us think we get it. Time is limited, of course. We only have so many years to live before we die. That's the inevitable end for all of us, at least in the current day and age with our current level of technology. Our human bodies will die at some point. Even with the introduction of new technology and experimental procedures such as cryopreservation, we can't be certain that any of us, even those with the highest levels of financial wealth, will be able to survive beyond our current physical limits. That's a reality we all have to acknowledge at some point or another, regardless of how much money we have in the bank. We all die. We get that. It's a simple concept. We're born, we grow up, we work, and we die. That's life. So we might as well spend our money how we see fit to enjoy life to the fullest today, right? Well, I think that can only go so far in terms of being able to distract ourselves from the reality of our humanness. It can only work for so long until we run out of money to spend, we reach a point of wealth where we find ourselves encountering problem number one, or we reach a point of financial monotony in our lives when the realization of the finiteness of our being strikes us. This could be a certain age or birthday. It could be a result of seeing someone you know die, or could simply be an internal revelation you have through a period of deep introspection. And if we aren't at a level of understanding, a level of mental maturity to accept that money cannot extend life, it can be crushing, especially if we've dedicated a heavy majority of our time chasing it. In our youth, it's easy to think winning the lottery would make us instantly happy forever. But deep down, what we all want most as humans is to avoid death. There's an unspoken belief that somehow money can prolong life, prolong existence indefinitely. We want to be able to keep ourselves alive, keep our families alive, our children alive, our grandchildren alive. But no amount of money can achieve this indefinitely. And I believe we have to face this reality head on as early as we can as adults, and especially as parents. When we acknowledge both sides of the coin of what money can and can't do, we can approach it with a whole new mindset. Now, the fact of the matter is money is unavoidable. In a world of capitalism, survival is extremely difficult without money or some form of currency, so I firmly believe money and happiness share a relationship. But some people try to make the argument that money and happiness are unrelated. They may argue that children in poor countries around the world are living perfectly happy lives. Or, on the opposite end of the spectrum, they may try to argue that those with lots of money are inherently unhappy. But happiness, as many other things in life, can be relative. Could a child living in a straw and mud hut with their 8 siblings in a third world country have a great time playing soccer with their friends? Sure. But wouldn't that child be much happier if he didn't have to stress over the possibility of having anything to eat that night or having fresh water to drink after the game? Wouldn't he be much happier if he didn't have to worry about disease or death from infection if he scrapes his knee on a rock while playing? Could a celebrity living in their 5-story mansion with a garage full of exotic cars have a bad day dealing with a copyright lawsuit? Sure. But wouldn't she rather be paying those ungodly high lawyer fees than working a 12-hour shift to pay her bills? Everyone's situations are different. Everyone has different circumstances, different living environments, different expectations, different realities. When I describe the areas of life through Jenga, I explain how my financial area covers the 2 lowest levels of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, physiological needs and safety and security needs. And I stated that I don't believe you need to fully satisfy an area to reach into the others. And I truly believe that. But the bar of financial satisfaction is set differently by each individual. What one person feels they need can be completely different than another person. And that bar can constantly shift when it is reached. This is sometimes referred to as lifestyle creep. It's extremely common and dangerously hard to avoid. And it can take a long time and a lot of maturing to recognize its grip on your life. But when you can do so, you can achieve so much more. Finding the right bar is key to your life's financial area development, and it can unlock the true power of money, of financial stability, so you can focus your energy and time more deliberately on the other significantly more important areas. It can do the same for your family, for your kids. The level of wealth each of us strives for will be different, and therefore the level of understanding about money that we each need to reach, as well as the rate at which we can achieve understanding in other areas of life, doesn't necessarily correlate linearly. But establishing that stable financial base should be a priority. According to a recent survey by Bankrate, the average American needs an annual income of $186,000 to live comfortably, and 3 in 10 respondents said they will likely never feel financially secure. We've become so accustomed to our inflated levels of wealth and relatively luxurious lifestyles that making 6 figures now seems like a necessity instead of being a career goal for some people, for a lot of people. And despite what the media says and provides as excuse ammunition for those who have made poor financial decisions in their lives, the goal of achieving financial stability is well within reach for many people. Our society has just chosen to ignore its severe shortcomings in effectively teaching financial literacy and restraining the toxicity from the government and various media outlets that have overstressed unnecessary consumerism principles. Tempering expectations and understanding the basics of financial management are two of the most important lessons our education system has completely failed to implement. And these are not recent issues. These are generational issues that have progressively worsened from the baby boomers to their kids as Gen Xers and millennials, and beyond now to their kids as Gen Zers and beyond. As adults and parents in today's world, there needs to be an emphasis on financial literacy from an early age to not only ensure future generations can own their own financial lives, but to avoid a future economic collapse that I believe we are currently teetering on the brink of today. A financial base consisting of solid emergency funds, limited risk retirement investments, and necessary insurances is key for all adults and what we should be teaching our kids about. As parents, we aren't raising kids, we're raising adults. And it's on us to ensure our kids, as well as the others in their younger generations, are educated properly. Having these bases provides opportunities to explore the world, pursue higher education, and improve our collective knowledge base as humans, which is so much more important than individualistic wealth preservation strategies aimed at widening wealth gaps and keeping the masses in the dark about basic financial proficiencies. It is so important that I believe if we don't change drastically in the next 10 to 20 years, we may find ourselves facing extreme economic turmoil, leading to potentially deadly conflicts. Now, I know that may sound a little extreme, but from everything I've learned and seen regarding widespread economic trends, I truly believe the older generations have caused major damage to our society, and we as younger parents and adults will now have to deal with the scars. As a parent myself, recognizing the importance of financial stability and understanding the psychology behind money, I have substantially changed my personal mindset and approach towards money over the last several years. This all started the year leading up to the birth of our daughter, and I have continued to evolve my budgeting and financial growth tactics to be much more forward-looking since becoming a father. Growing up in a heavily white suburb in Illinois, I always felt like my family was of average wealth. My siblings and I never had to worry about having food on the table or having our utilities shut off. We were always able to pursue the activities we wanted to, whether that be sports, music, or anything else. We never had to worry about not having a roof over our heads. In fact, we never had to even share bedrooms. I had this strange sense of major middle-classness that was a result of having a mix of friends, some whose families appeared much better off and some whose families appeared less fortunate. I had this sense of entitlement that what we had was average, and in my head, I had the goal, the objective of wanting more, of wanting to earn more, have more, and become more wealthy than my parents to prove to them I was successful. In reality, we were very well off, and although I feel like I was raised well on the principles of treating others equally, I can recall several occasions that I'm sure I came off to others as an overly privileged prick without realizing it. Fast forward to today, and as a true middle-class dad, I've had to come to the realization that my want for more wealth and status growing up was born from a similar psychological desire that many have today to receive affection and approval from others. It was extremely tough to acknowledge that and really understand how to overcome it, but I recognized how other areas of my life were suffering from my personal desire to chase a financial bar set by others. I recognized the path towards achieving that goal didn't align with my personal values, and once I was able to accept that, I was able to shift gears. I was able to take myself out of the rat race and was able to start running a financial race of my own with my own goals in mind. And I want to add for clarification that the goals on paper may look very similar, but the path I've carved out to get there is completely different. I'll share more of the details and provide specific examples in future videos or podcast episodes down the road. But metaphorically, my financial mindset effectively changed from focusing on trying to win a sprint to focusing on completing a marathon. And that change has significantly improved my internal perception on my family's finances, as well as helped me begin to formulate an educational path for my kids to understand the importance of finances and how to approach them in their own way. I'm no longer simply concerned with the bottom line, but I am directed to making my financial moves towards achieving my personal value goals, which feels so much more motivating and rewarding. Now, I want to tie the area of finances back to the structure of Jenga by providing you with a couple example cornerstones to consider in your financial lives. If you recall from the previous episode in my Jenga metaphor, I consider any blocks required to keep a given level supported to be cornerstones. They are the blocks that are critical to the stability of your tower in its current form. They are the blocks that must remain to avoid a collapse. Beyond the expected cornerstones mentioned earlier, such as emergency funds, retirement accounts, and critical insurances such as health, car, and life insurance, I believe there are several important value-based financial cornerstones we should all strive to forge. Two of mine are time-saving expenses and vacation funds. As I've reiterated, money alone cannot buy happiness, but it can buy time in a way. And the extra time affords you additional opportunities that in turn can improve happiness levels. And so I believe a financial cornerstone we should all seek to forge is time-saving expenses. You're probably thinking that doesn't really seem like a financial block, but if we can use money to automate or simplify parts of our lives for the sake of increasing our personal or family time, it becomes much more powerful. Why do we pay for lawn services or house cleaners? Why do we pay for home organizers or nannies? These services reduce the amount of time and energy we have to spend on certain household tasks, and consequently, we're able to do something else with that time that we don't have to then spend on those tasks. I value my time, and I value my money. There's a balance to strike with this one, and if you take some time to quantify what an hour of your personal time is worth in dollars, that can be used to assess the value of certain services. For example, if I feel my time is worth $100 an hour and it would take me 6 hours to do a full yard work cleanup, but a landscaper offers to do it for $300, it's worth seriously considering because I'd save 6 hours and 50% of the cost of my own personal time. Time is not money. And understanding how to evaluate opportunities to spend money to buy time and when to actually take action are two extremely important skills to learn. Both can help you become an effective time buyer. Now, moving on to the second one, I mentioned it earlier, but in my mind, vacations are one of the most important parts of our lives, and consequently, vacation funds are another cornerstone of my personal tower's financial area. But I believe they should be one everyone has. Vacations, travel, cruises, excursions, whatever you want them to be, are so crucial to keeping you in a good headspace, but more importantly, they can earn you something I like to call life capital. Capital is a fancy financial term for money. Sometimes it's used in the context of real estate, where there are capital investments or capital projects that require cash infusions. But life capital is different. Life capital isn't earned through work at your 9-to-5. It's earned through strategic time and money investments into your passions and interests. Life capital is everything you learn from trips or experiences, memories you get from breaking out of work mode and seeing the world in all its glory. And it's so much more valuable than monetary capital. But in many cases, we need money to afford vacations, so in this context, I see vacation funds as a cornerstone because by dedicating a part of your financial life to vacations, you can use the transactional power of money to accelerate your personal growth and knowledge and that of your children by using it for these life capital earning experiences. As you may have noticed, I actually took a week off from the podcast and content creation as we took a short vacation up to the Carolinas to spend time with friends. We drove a half day each way to get there, and while driving home, I was able to just think and process the importance of the trip itself. It was just a long weekend, but the time we spent with friends, nurturing those relationships, making memories as a family with our daughter, and focusing on that mental break we had from the busyness of daily life was so much more valuable than the money we spent. Forging this vacation fund cornerstone has taken time, energy, and discipline. It's difficult to build up a financial base and consistently make choices that afford you these types of opportunities. Sometimes you have to make unpopular decisions. But for us and our family, rather than spending our money on nicer clothes, cars, or toys to show off to others, we've been able to make a conscious effort to prioritize vacations because we understand and believe in their life capital value. Now, each of you will have your own opinions, own values, and can determine what cornerstones you want or need to support your specific lifestyle. These are just a couple examples I have focused on in my life, but taking the approach of trying to understand why money is important to you can help you determine what your cornerstone should be. Asking yourself and answering why you want money, what is truly important to you in life, and what you want your money to do for you can help point you in the right direction. Finances are just one piece of the puzzle of life, one that we must do our best to understand to not only survive and operate in the common world, but also to be able to direct our energy properly. If we focus solely on the singular area, we can find ourselves lost and empty. We can find ourselves in our old age, full of regret and wishing we had time to make up for the relationships, experiences, and knowledge we never pursued. We need money, but we need to understand the psychology behind it too. We need to understand how to set financial goals but not get absorbed in them. We need to understand how to approach financial wants versus needs. We need to understand how to weigh the value of money against the value of what it can do for us. As we move through the series, I'll continue to explain how finances are woven into the fabric of our lives and how we can leverage this area to achieve a greater level of satisfaction in the others, leading to a much more fulfilling and happier life. This is the Dad Named Mac podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode and came away with some questions to think about. In my next episode, I'll dive into the area of relationships, which I'm very excited to discuss with you all. As always, thanks for listening.